talking with Dr. Robert Schock about his research into the Sphinx and the pyramids. In terms of the Sphinx, were you got involved in it because you met this other professor at Boston University. Did they request that you look into it, and what happened from there?
Well, what happened is I met another professor. We became friends. He's no longer at Boston University, but it was an English professor. Mm-hmm. And he happened to know a fellow named John Anthony West, who's we'll call him an independent Egyptologist. He's done a lot of work in Egypt, very knowledgeable, written a lot about Egypt. And he was aware of the work of one of his predecessors by the name of Schwaller de Lubitsch, who had suggested in a relatively obscure publication, should we say, that maybe the Sphinx was older than dynastic Egypt, or at least the Fourth Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow I knew, the English professor who knew this Egyptologist, John Anthony West, who's since become a very good friend and colleague, thought that maybe he and I, John Anthony West and I, should get together to talk about things because, the Sphinx is made out of stone, and if you're going to date something, maybe you should ask a geologist.
And that's what you did.
And that's exactly what I did. So that's how I got involved in the immediate sense, how I got involved with Egypt and pyramids. Like I said, I always had an interest in such things, but it was that immediate contact. Over a dozen years ago now, that got me involved in this project.
You mentioned the geophysical studies. What were they, and what did you find?
What we did, and when I say we now, I got together with another colleague, Tom DeBecky, who's a Houston geophysicist, very good geophysicist. And what we did is we went over to Egypt. We took seismic equipment, and I'll explain it really quickly. What we did is we took basically a steel plate, and we put it down in spots around the Sphinx and elsewhere on the Giza Plateau. You hammer on it with a sledgehammer. This generates energy, essentially sound waves that go down into the rock, and then they essentially bounce around there, and we can pick them up with what are known as geophones, basically microphones. And you can record how quickly the energy waves, the sound waves, travel through the rock, what they bounce off of. So you can get all kinds of information about the density of the rock, where there might be cavities, et cetera. And what we found was two main things. One, I was very interested, and this is why we did it initially, I was very interested in looking at subsurface weathering features, how the mineralogy has changed in the rock, and this occurs with time, occurs since it's been carved. So that gave me a very good handle. I could calibrate that to figure out how old the oldest portions of the Sphinx are.
I see.
And that tied right in with the other data I had on climate and erosion on the surface, which we had mentioned before the break. Secondly, and this was the most exciting to a lot of people, we found essentially what is a discontinuous, I'll describe it sort of as a tunnel along the length of the body of the Sphinx underneath, not in
really?
The body, but actually underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And also there seems to be a cavity, or I should say there is a cavity or chamber under the, basically under the left paw of the Sphinx. And neither of these were known previously. We also found a hole or cavity under the rump of the Sphinx on the left side, but that was already known to have been there. In fact, that latter feature seems to be something that is much younger than the Sphinx. It's ancient, but in ancient times some people thought, well, maybe there's treasure buried under the Sphinx, and they tried to sort of tunnel in.
And
so we found that, not knowing it was there, but Zahi Hawass, the Egyptologist in charge of the Giza Plateau, and actually all antiquities in Egypt at this point, already knew it was there. So that was nice. It confirmed that mm-hmm. our techniques were working properly.
Sure.
But then we found this cavity, which was unknown until we found it, and has yet to be explored under the left paw of the Sphinx. I'll just throw this out because I'm sure some of the listeners are aware of it. Edgar Cayce, I don't know that much about him, but I guess we call him did psychic work. I don't know
yes. if
that's the correct term. He had, interestingly, and this was unbeknownst to me, predicted some kind of cavity or chamber under the Sphinx. Sometimes I believe referred to as the Hall of Records. So mm-hmm. I'm not claiming we found that, but we did find something under the left paw, which has yet to be entered and explored.
In your finding of it, were you able to determine the size of this cavity?
Not real precisely. I mean, it's decent size. It's maybe
meaning what?
Oh, maybe 30 feet on the side.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a small structure. It's not like a little, 5 foot by 5 foot
yeah.
structure. But it's hard to delineate that precisely with the seismic data. At first, I was thinking, well, as a geologist, the first thing I thought is it's some kind of natural feature, some mm-hmm. kind of natural structure. But the data we were getting back, it's very regular. It doesn't look like a natural, cave or...
A hole in the rock,
exactly. It's very, very, very regular, rectangular. Also seems to be what I would call, as a geologist, rubble-filled. Now, what's the rubble? It could be that the ceiling on it collapsed, so it's literally rubble, rock rubble. It could be filled with, to take the other extreme, gold vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And someday I think we'll learn.
How would you find out? Would you have to drill through, go
yeah.
under, or use technology to see through the stone?
Yeah, we might be able to, in discussing the politics of Egypt, which is why
yeah.
more has not been done so far, I might be able to do some more refined remote sensing geophysical techniques to get a better feel of exactly the size and structure of it. Ultimately, though, you'd want to enter it to know exactly what is there. You could maybe drill into it and put down a fiber optic camera. That would be mm-hmm. one possibility. You may be familiar that on the Giza Plateau, they're later than I believe this chamber is, but around the Great Pyramid, for instance, boat pits, ancient boat pits, where they found solar boats, as they sometimes refer to them.
Yes.
And in some of those, for instance, National Geographic, I believe it was drilled into it and put down a fiber optic camera to see what was in it before it was actually opened up.
Well, they used the camera in those passageways in the pyramid, too.
Exactly. In fact, they did some of that, I guess, on live TV.
Yes, they did.
The
I saw that.
But I watched that going up and inserting. So there are different possibilities like that, but all of them involve risk. Of course, because...
What's the risk?
Well, for instance, if a chamber is sealed up and has been sealed up for a very long time, and then you introduce something into it, you may introduce, modern gases, modern atmosphere, which uh-huh. if there's very fragile materials in there, say papyrus, documents, that type of thing, it could damage them very, very quickly by being exposed to the modern atmosphere, if it's been sealed up.
Boy, that presents an enormous problem, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. So I can understand why, Egyptian authorities don't always want to rush into things. The other question is, well, how did they get into this chamber originally? I have not
yeah.
found, there must be some kind of entrance to it, and I've not found that, although I personally have a hypothesis as to the answer.
What's that?
And that is something else that we found. I'll try to describe it for those that have not been to Egypt. The Sphinx sits on the eastern edge of the Giza Plateau, to the east of the Second Pyramid. In front of the Sphinx is what's known as the Sphinx Temple. It's very ruinous now, but what we'll call the Sphinx Temple. And then in front of that, so you're headed west to east, so you have the Sphinx Temple, and then in front of the Sphinx Temple at the moment is just a big area of sand, basically. It's just level sand, and in fact, it's used for tourists to. It's a nice viewing platform, a nice place to look and see the Sphinx and the pyramids behind.
Yeah.
No one ever knew what was under the sand there. It was assumed it was just a layer of sand and, you know, basically horizontal rock underneath. We did some seismic lines along there to see what was really under the sand. I was actually looking for the water table.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see how low the water table was. Turns out that that sand is really deep, and what we found is that the Sphinx and the Sphinx temple in front of it basically sit on a cliff, if you would, if you removed all the sand. And I think originally that was probably not filled in with sand. We found what looked like some artificial or man-made structures on at the base of the cliff. And I think originally you sort of approached the Giza Plateau walking west, so you're facing, looking at the Sphinx. You would see the Sphinx Temple and the Sphinx, and then looming behind it, ultimately in the Fourth Dynasty, the pyramids. And my suspicion is that there might be some kind of entrance on that cliff face that then goes into a corridor, or if you want to call it a tunnel, that would then go up into that chamber. But it's all covered with sand now. I mean, you know, 50 feet of sand.
I was going to say, how high is that cliff? 50 feet?
Yeah, something like that.
Where did that sand just blow in from the desert, or do you think it was put there?
You have to remember, you're on the edge of the Sahara Desert, and there's lots of sand, and it blows, and it basically covers over and fills in everything.
Does it blow west to east, mostly?
Yeah, mostly. Mostly at the present day.
Yeah.
It blows down into, essentially, toward the east, toward the Nile Valley. Just tying in with that, the Sphinx itself, many, if you haven't been to Egypt, if one has not been to Egypt, a lot of times people think, well, the Sphinx just sits out there in its full glory. In fact, it sits in a hole.
I have not been there, and I'm dying to go. It's a place I've wanted to go since I was about 7 years old.
Oh, it's fabulous. I would recommend it to anyone. But it sits in a hole, or what's known as the Sphinx enclosure, or the Sphinx pit, sometimes people refer to it. And it's actually very logical if you think about it. It's carved from the bedrock. It's carved from natural stone.
Yeah.
And the head originally was a geological, I'll call it an outlier, seems to have sat above the ground level. And I think what they did originally is there was this big chunk of rock sitting above ground level. They started carving into a head. But then to carve the body, they had to carve down, if that makes sense. So, in fact, the body actually sits below what was the original ground level. And to this day sits, you know, it basically looks like it sits in a hole, which is what it's doing.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and that will fill up with sand very, very quickly if it's not attended to. I mean, within 10 to 20 years, if no one sweeps out the sand on a regular basis. And in fact, we know in ancient times, say New Kingdom times, 1500, 1400 BC, the Sphinx was buried up to its chin in sand. And then
I've seen speculation about that. And
yeah.
Wouldn't that have preserved the body, though?
That is one very nice thing for me as a geologist. In fact, it did preserve the body. And that's one reason very, very ancient erosional features that go back to before 3000 BC are still preserved on the body of the Sphinx.
And I see what you mean.
Yeah, use and date them. Put crudely, if the Sphinx had been originally carved, as was generally believed by traditional Egyptologists in 2500 BC, given how often it's been filled in with sand and covered over with sand, it would have nowhere close to the erosion that we see on the body of the Sphinx. Much of that is very, very ancient weathering and erosion that's been preserved.
Have your theory about that it was wetter and more water in that area, whether it was surface water or underground water, rain or jungle or what? I mean, have you confirmed that?
I'm sorry?
Have you confirmed that theory with...
Yeah, that's not my theory. I don't want to take credit for that. And when I say we know, geologists have reconstructed over the last 80 to 100 or more years very detailed patterns of climate and weather in North Africa. And that's very well known, that it was much wetter, more temperate, sort of lush savanna-type area, not just in Giza, but all through North Africa. We have all kinds of evidence for that from actual fossil, I would call them subfossil, but ancient organisms. Some people may have heard about paintings that have been found going back to 4000 BC and earlier that actually show what it looked like. I mean, the inhabitants were making paintings, these ancient paintings of what it looked like. We have soil samples that include things like pollens, tells you exactly what plants were living there, which of course correlates with the climate, with the amount of rainfall. So that's very well established.
Just out of curiosity, where are these ancient paintings?
Oh, some of them are found in the parts of the Western Sahara. Some are actually found to the east.
Are they in buildings they find them, or on buildings?
No, sort of on, if you think, I mean, the best analogy that most people would know is if you think about Australia, how they'll have paintings on cliff faces and,
I've seen rocks,
that type of thing. You get that in, say, before 4000 BC or so in ancient Egypt also in certain places. So some of that is just a matter of, you know, where do you have a cliff face or a little rock shelter where they've been preserved ever since? I mean, there must have been many more that have been lost.
Wow. You mentioned also this cavern or this cavity under the paw of the Sphinx. But you also said that there's a tunnel under the whole thing. Now, are you saying it's not part of the Sphinx, but it's below it?
Yeah, below it. Below it. And then that ties in with the, if you think of the Sphinx, it's carved out of bedrock. And these features, as far as I can determine, are actually under the Sphinx, not within the body of the Sphinx.
And what are the dimensions of that? Could you calculate that?
That tunnel type feature?
Yeah, I mean, is it like tall enough to walk in and really wide or what?
That is really hard right now with the data we have exactly. I suspect it's probably I don't know if it would be big enough. I'm a little over 6 feet for me to actually walk in standing up, but I think I could I could certainly maneuver through it. And it seems to be about the length of the body, and the Sphinx itself is about 240 or so feet long, and it seems to run the length of the body underneath the body, length of the body. When it shows up, it looks like it may be wider, sort of widens and narrows along its length.
Yeah.
Not precisely. Again, that's based on the seismic data we've got so far. Not precisely the same width all along its length.
Do you find rubble in that too, as you found in the cavity?
Yes, it looks like. In fact, one reason I'm a little, I'd say it looks like it may sort of widen in places and narrow in places, it may be that it's collapsed a little bit. So that's why it's showing up that way. If it's a human-made feature that was perfectly smooth dimensions along its length originally and then collapsed in a couple of places slightly,
that could happen.
It would look like what we see, on the seismic data.
We're going to find out more because we're talking about the Sphinx. We haven't even gotten to the pyramids yet, and boy, that takes us all around the world. Where'd they come from? Why? Who did it? How? All of that we'll touch on right here on Coast to Coast AM as we continue. I'm Barbara Simpson.